Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 score scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't know. No. I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, you got it.
Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
The Locked On Bulls podcast.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails, anything you got for us, 331-979-1369. Our episode today is sponsored by rockauto.com. Reliably low prices, all the car parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Matt, first weekend of basketball back, and I have to say I am not disappointed at all, with the exception, I guess, of the Pelicans getting blown out by 40. Every game has been somewhat exciting and somewhat interesting to watch. We got a lot of really close games this weekend, too. And, of course, we got our boy back. Our boy made his bubble debut.
Payne almost lost his balance off all those crossovers.
How are you, dude?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Glad to be back on the mics with you for another week of episodes, man. Hope everybody out there had a good weekend. I was so hyped when we heard that news a few weeks back. The campaign got that contract with the Suns and would be bubble bound, because you knew we were going to get at least a couple of these epic campaign moments. And he played 20 minutes in that game yesterday. And to his credit, 4 of 10 from the field, including 2 of 5 from downtown. 4 points, a steal, an assist, a block, only one turnover. And, 10 points, the Suns don't win that game without Campaign's 10 points. It's crazy.
Payne eyes another one, and the answer is yes.
Cameron Payne.
Oh, my God. They're getting hyped for Campaign was getting hyped for himself, too.
The one where he was going ISO and just dribbling, he out dribbled himself, man. The only person he juked was himself.
Up for the final shots of the third quarter. A third quarter where they have gone in front. What is their lead going to be? Payne almost lost his balance off all those crossovers.
The dude just can't get out of his own way, Matt. Even when he has a good game where he scores 10 points and he does knock down some shots, the dude just can't get out of his own way. Thinking, who is he guarded? Who is he guarded against? Was that Luka at the end guarding him, or is that JJ Barea? But regardless, he just can't get out of his own way. Calling an ISO really to end the quarter, Campaign. All right, calm down, man.
I mean, you can't knock him for this. Dude has confidence.
That's true.
I guess maybe you can knock him and say that maybe he has a little too much confidence, because he is not a beat a dude going ISO. I don't think he has the cred to be able to pull that move of clearing everybody out and saying, I'm going to take this guy one-on-one. Because clearly that didn't work. He can get hot and knock down some threes. That's the one thing the dude has. But I don't think he has developed enough credit and respect for himself to be able to pull a move like that.
Payne almost lost his balance off all those crossovers.
But you know what? Campaign right now, as of today, August 3rd, 2020, got the last laugh, because he is on a roster playing minutes in the bubble and the Bulls are not. And granted, it's on a Suns team that nobody is expecting to do anything, being one of the add-in Western Conference teams, because they were within that certain amount of games of the 8th seed for the playoffs for this play-in. But he's on a team in the bubble playing minutes. He wins right now and the Bulls lose.
I do give him credit for that. He does get the last laugh. Bulls are sitting at home, not playing in any games, and in their own situation, even though they haven't played a game in 5 months. And he's out there getting 10 points, knocking a couple threes down, still making people laugh on Twitter. So I'll give him kudos for that. But were you surprised by any of the games this weekend? Was there a favorite that you watched this weekend? Any surprises, any disappointments from you just from the first weekend?
Well, I think one of the bigger surprises for me as far as like the restart as a whole, and certainly continued through the weekend, is the Pelicans' use of Zion or lack thereof. And I, you know, we heard coming in that, you know, he may or may not be ready for their first game once the restart kicked off. He did get some minutes in that first game, which was, you know, the very first game of the bubble restart against Utah on last Thursday night or whenever it was. But it seems like, you know, a lot of people were talking about the league making this decision for the 22 team bubble, and a big reason for it being so that Zion and the Pelicans could be a part of it, so that maybe they could fight for that eighth seed and you could get Zion in the playoffs, which would certainly help your NBA TV ratings. And even if they didn't, even if they fell short of making the playoffs, then you would at least get some of these regular season bubble games with Zion, and you would, you know, boost your ratings for that. And the Pelicans, it seemed like everybody was talking about them making a push because, you know, their strength of schedule remaining compared to Memphis, who was trying to hold on to that eighth spot, was very favorable. And everybody thought that the most likely outcome of the bubble play-in games was the Pelicans stealing that eighth spot in the West. Right now, they look like a team not interested in all at making that happen, and their usage of Zion, especially not playing him really in the fourth quarter, that game that they lost to Utah where they took a commanding lead for a while, and then again over the weekend, the sporadicness of Zion. I get that maybe they're trying to protect the long-term investment of this number one draft pick franchise-changing talent, but it is kind of curious, don't you think?
Yeah, I'd agree. And I understand why they're doing it. Like, Zion's already had a couple scares, and even go back to college when he blew through his shoe and they thought, oh God, hopefully something's not wrong with him long term with his knee. I get why they're being very, very, very cautious with him. And I kind of understand it from the Pelican standpoint is, okay, even if we do push hard and get that eighth seed, who is it really benefiting? Is it benefiting us long term playing these weird playoff games? Is it benefiting our team as a core? Or is it benefiting the marketability of the NBA and the dollars that are going to go in the NBA's pocket at the end of the day? So I think it's leaning towards the latter, and where the Pelicans are like, hey, if this, like, us making the eighth seed, that would be great. But as far as long term, I don't think it's really that big of an issue right now. So if they want to, I guess, coddle the minutes of Zion Williamson right now, I don't blame them necessarily. It is just a little bit weird considering you're watching other guys like Kawhi and Paul George and LeBron, and all the stars are playing max minutes, and they're playing like this is the last 2 weeks of the season getting ready for playoffs. So
Yeah, and the Pelicans just really spread things out. Like in their blowout loss to the Clippers on Saturday, Zion only played 14 minutes. They played 13 guys total. And even if you say, okay, don't count Etuan Moore, who only played 5 minutes, every other player coming off the bench had at least 12 minutes. So you're talking about a 12-man rotation where every bench piece is getting at least 12 minutes. That's a lot of minute sharing, and it doesn't really seem like a team that's trying that hard to make that eighth seed. And I don't necessarily really blame them if the Pelicans are taking the cautious approach here, because if they do squeak into that eighth seed, do they realistically believe in their, you know, likelihood and ability of beating the Lakers, you know, who are most likely going to end up as the number one seed in the Western Conference? Because I don't think it's, you know, disrespecting themselves in any way to say that's probably not going to happen. So maybe limit the number of games and the number of minutes for these talented young players we have. But you also wonder what the conversations were like for the players on that Pelicans roster when we were back in the phase of the Players Association discussing whether or not they wanted to do this bubble idea.
The only thing I could say is flip it on its head and think about it in the Bulls' perspective. What happens if the Bulls were in this bubble and say they had a guy like Zion, or we had Coby White out there, and the Bulls are down 40 and you still have a half to play, or you still have 12 minutes left? How badly would the front office and the organization get killed by the fan base if something happened to Zion and maybe he twists an ankle, hurts himself in a game that doesn't mean anything and you're down 40? So I can kind of understand it from that point, but I do get it. People want to see him, and at some point he does need to get playing time. He needs to get his minutes out there because he didn't play a whole lot before the shutdown.
And of course, you know, that was going to be a concern for all these players coming in, not just risking their health and the health of, you know, their loved ones with the pandemic still raging, and especially going down to Florida where it's very bad right now. And even with the bubble, you're surrounded by a high risk area, but the potential for getting a career altering suffering a career altering injury in this weird bubble experiment where maybe there's going to be an asterisk on winning it all this year. Maybe if you were a team that was on the outside looking in of a playoff spot, the risk of a career-altering injury really didn't seem worth it. And just look at what happened with Jonathan Isaac in that game for the Magic last night. You know, awful news, confirmed that he has a torn ACL. And he was a guy who, yeah, was dealing with injury issues already in the early stage of his career, but had come back and was really looking like a young player making big strides and maybe had a really bright career in front of him. Now he tears an ACL in one of these bubble games where, yeah, you know, Orlando may have ended up being a team that gets to, you know, go to the first round of the playoffs, but that's likely about it. And now, obviously, Isaac, not quite as prominent of a name in the NBA as Zion Williamson, but still, that was just, you were fearing and waiting for something like that to happen. Seemed almost inevitable, didn't it?
Yeah, it's too bad. And Orlando's the 7th seed right now. They're just hanging on to with the 7th seed, I believe. Yeah, they're only a game ahead of the Nets. Actually, a half game ahead of the Nets. And Washington's pretty much out of it right now. They're 24-42. I think they're 6.5 behind Brooklyn. So it's basically Brooklyn and Orlando fighting for those last two spots in positioning wise. So you either get to play the Bucks or you get to play the Raptors. But yeah, it is too bad to see that. One positive note, Matt, I want to hit on from the bubble, and then we'll go to our Bulls news of the week to kick things off. But before I do that, I want to talk to you guys about a new sponsor here at Locked On Bulls and the Locked On Podcast Network, and that's CBDMD. Doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair, everyone needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, recharge when life gets chaotic. I was checking out CBDMD on their website, and I was telling you, Matt, they have everything from gummies to tinctures to oils to lotions. They even have products for your pet. So I don't know if your dogs, if you know, 4th of July just passed and fireworks can give dogs huge anxiety, and CBD kind of helps that with anxiety, helps them sleep, helps them be calm. So they even have that, which is kind of crazy, and it's awesome too. CBD Freeze with menthol is an award-winning product that CBDMD offers. It's instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient, easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube. So if you want to avoid pulled muscles, cramps after workouts, and you want to relax your muscles, CBD Freeze with menthol is awesome. And they also have CBD Recover. CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need when it matters most. And to make it even easier to try these amazing duos of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer, they're offering our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code NBA at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com, promo code NBA, 25% off your purchase. Superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. Get something for yourself and get something for the furry friend in your life. Matt, to kick back to the bubble really fast, one thing I was really impressed by was De'Aaron Fox, man. Holy shit, does he look good. And dropping 39 points in a game that they lost against the Spurs, if that Kings team can figure it out completely, and they're one of the teams that I think suffered a huge hit by the shutdown, and that was that I felt that they were rolling and they were getting all of their guys to play at a high level, but De'Aaron Fox looks even better than he did before the shutdown. And I will also say, too, that Raptors team, man, even without Kawhi, again, they're just clamped on defense. And shout out to Nick Nurse and Kyle Lowry still getting it done for that team, too. And some of their other pieces around there, that the guys that they've drafted and developed have now stepped up in the place of losing Kawhi just a year ago. So they look really, really good, too. And I think that if there's a matchup of the Bucks and the Raptors, and that's the Eastern Conference Finals that we see, I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised with that matchup.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Raptors are my, if it's not Milwaukee, who would it be team And I think they have been since the, you know, since the shutdown happened, based on the, you know, the various trends of teams in the Eastern Conference. And you're right. I mean, Nick Nurse deserves a hell of a lot of credit this season for losing Kawhi and still fielding a team that competitive. They still managed to keep their defensive dominance, even losing Kawhi, one of the best defensive players in the game. You know, credit also to Pascal Siakam for taking another big step in his, you know, all-star caliber play this season. And, you know, we just heard earlier today the results of the coaches poll for, you know, coach of the year, and it, Nick Nurse was one vote shy of making it a three-way tie. Budenholzer getting it, repping the East, and Billy Donovan also being awarded for the incredible work he did keeping the OKC Thunder relevant this season despite the Russ for CP3 trade. So there were a lot of tough choices for coach of the year this year and a lot of deserving candidates. But I'm with you, man. Like, especially the way that we have seen Milwaukee kind of struggle so far in their first couple of games. And yes, it's only a couple of games and they've got time to get some things right and hopefully, you know, also get back a piece that's very important in Bledsoe. But they have certainly looked vulnerable in their first couple of outings. And I would not be surprised to see the Raptors really give it to them, assuming that we see those two teams match up in the playoffs.
As we record this right now, it's the fourth quarter. Heat, Raptors, Heat are up 3. The Heat have also looked really good too, Matt. And I think this is going to play a huge factor. We talked about this before the bubble even started. The teams with good depth and guys that don't have to be stars, but guys that can fill their role and play 20, 25 minutes and give you some type of production are the teams that are going to last. Your stars can only do so much. You've seen in some of these games already that sometimes even the star power isn't enough to drag you along in some of these bubble games. And not all of these guys are in top peak condition right now. And we're kind of finding that out with a few different guys. I know just like watching the Pelicans, Lonzo Ball had been off to a bad start shooting. Brandon Ingram looked pretty good for the Pelicans, but there's been a handful of players with different teams that have been off to surprisingly slow starts. But I thought the Heat looked good, and I also thought OKC looked good, which is going to be a fun game to watch later today, which will be Nuggets and Thunder. Any other teams that you were surprised how fast they came out, or maybe teams that surprised you and they're kind of flat and might stumble into the playoffs?
So one of each, and maybe when you're talking about surprised by good or surprised by bad, Mavs have had a really tough start to the bubble play-in part of this this NBA restart. I mean, we were just talking and joking about campaign at the start of the show. How do you lose to the Suns if you're Dallas?
Payne almost lost his Dallas off all those crossovers.
I mean, and what more can you ask of Luka Doncic? You know, a player who, in my opinion, should probably finish inside the top five for MVP this season. I think he finished with like 48-11. Porzingis chipped in 30, and you still lose to Phoenix, and that was, you know, after a really, really tough loss when they lost to Houston in the second night of the. You know, primetime doubleheader on Friday night. And that was a crazy game, 153 to 149. I was actually on with the Second City sports guys, Sydney Brown and Lakina McGee, on Friday afternoon. And I was joking with them about how the over-under for that game should be 300 as far as total points. And it actually hit 153 to 149. That's crazy. But for as offensively dominant as Dallas was all season long, I mean, they were a historically good offensive team. And I'm, you know, especially for the mental sanity of my buddy John from Outsiders, who is like half Bulls, half Mavs fan, I'm worried about him and his Mavs maybe making a quick early exit from the playoffs because they don't look quite right now. But another team that's been surprisingly interesting to me is that Houston team that beat Dallas. I never had any faith in that system working. When you swap, you know, CP3 for Russ, you put Russ and Harden together, you ship off Capella and just go crazy, crazy small ball. To me, I'm still not convinced that that's going to be a winning formula come, you know, best of seven series time. But they have been fun to watch, and they've been pretty good so far in the games that I've watched them play.
Yeah, that Rockets team, even last night, though, somehow it was working for the first three quarters because they ended up, which was surprising, is they ended up beating the Bucks. Maybe that goes back to the more of the threes that they were hitting. But, I mean, Russell Westbrook, I felt like, especially in the third and fourth quarter watching that game, And it was a good job, maybe by the coaching staff or maybe by James Harden or one of the players for picking it up and slowing the pace down a little bit. But every time Russell Westbrook would go to the rim and try to chuck up a shot in front of two or three guys, he was getting it stolen. The Bucks were getting easy buckets on the other side. And that's what the Rockets can't do. They either have to beat you by three or let James Harden go off. But if Russell Westbrook's going to try to play savior alongside James Harden, I think he's just going to ruin things for that team. Although they are 2-0 and they... It was a hell of a win on Friday in that overtime game. And again, credit to Luka Doncic. Like, that's insane. Triple-double, and then you drop 40, and you're still 0-2 after the first two games. Is just, it's bizarre to me. But yeah, man, Houston's going to try people, though. If they continue to shoot the way that they are, and James Harden continues to pick up, what, 24 free throws in a game, it's going to be awfully tough to stop those dudes. So I'm very excited for the first round of the playoffs as we kind of come up here.
Jordan, before we get to our Bulls rumor mill from the weekend, wanted to remind our listeners that today's episode is also brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's almost impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless and seemingly intimidating questioning, like is your Odyssey an LX or an EX? And wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing only the brands and that his warehouse happens to carry. You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers for online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They've got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic car or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, the specifications, and the prices that you prefer. Best of all, speaking of those prices, at rockauto.com, they are always reliably low, and they're the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the exact same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Be sure to write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
So who's getting traded, Matt? Is it Wendell? Is it Lowry?
According to Joe Cowley and other NBA scouts and executives, everyone, they're flipping the whole roster from top to bottom.
But, I mean, we did talk about this when we were talking about Joe Cowley's column the other day, late last week. We brought it up towards the tail end and didn't really touch on it a whole lot. But Cowley followed up with it this weekend with a column talking about maybe Carter or Markkanen being the pieces that the front office can get the most value for, trade those guys, and they want to keep Zach long-term. And I don't think that that's out of the realm of possibility, is keeping Kobe and Zach here long-term, or flipping on its head and saying, hey, you know what, we're going to trade Lowry and Zach and keep Kobe and Wendell, or picking only two of the four of those core guys that they like, or hell, man, maybe they only keep one guy, maybe they only keep Kobe White, and they trade Zach, Lowry, and Wendell. But let's start with Wendell Carter, because I think he is the key piece here in starting the ball on the trades. And that's if he's going to pressure the front office to really allow him to make a position change. Is that something he really, really wants to do? And it's been vocal a couple times throughout this season that he's frustrated playing the center position and he wants to go back to playing power forward. And that may help his game in a handful of ways if he stays with the Bulls. But how likely do you think it is of pressure from Carter being the initial start to trade talks, trade conversation, who gets moved, who doesn't?
Yeah, Wendell is a really interesting one to me, because while he is also frustrated and expressed his frustrations, you know, in a couple different ways this season, as Cowley noted in his latest column, especially which you just mentioned, the, you know, preference to play, you know, to shift more to the power forward spot than playing center, you know, a position for which he is undersized even in today's NBA. And the fact that he maybe didn't express frustration about it vocally frequently, but he couldn't have been happy with his role in the offense. We know that Lowry, you know, similarly expressed a couple of times his frustration with his role in the offense, but Wendell was even more of a ghost offensively than Lowry was this season, and certainly looked confused, certainly feel like appeared to be a guy who was not sure at all of what his role was supposed to be in that offense, and was largely not involved in it. We also know, and this is what makes it curious to me, that of all the players on this Bulls roster, the one who has most vocally stood up for Jim Boylen and said he actually likes Jim Boylen is Wendell Carter Jr. Because you remember it was earlier on this season when I can't remember who he was, talking to media wise, but I remember that, the quote from Wendell, and I'm paraphrasing here, was something along the lines of like, yeah, Jim and I had our differences at first, and it was, it was an adjustment period going from Fred to Jim. But now I understand that he really cares about us and he wants us to do well. And I really like Jim. Do you remember the quote that I'm referring to, Jordan?
Yeah, I'm trying to find it right now. I think it was back in January.
So, that's the part that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Unless it was just Wendell being really nice.
All right, so this was back over All-Star Weekend, Matt, that you're referring to, and I think I caught the quote that you're talking about. So this is from Bloggable, and this is from Jason Pat. It says, Carter talked openly about Jim Boylen, even laughing when he was asked a question about Jimbo's coaching before giving this answer. Jim is definitely a different coach from what I've had. He shows a lot of passion. He speaks what's on his mind. At first, we didn't get along as well as I would have thought, but then I got to know him, and he just wants us to be great. He really cares for us. He really wants us to play well. So that's kind of how I feel about him. I love him now. He's one of my favorite coaches I've ever had. I'm just looking forward to going on with him for years to come. So, and I even think back, Matt, to a year prior to that. Remember when he pulled Carter out of the game and sat him and said, well, maybe sometimes you learn by sitting and you need to have a little introspection? Like, that was the building block.
But wait, Jordan, I thought Jim also said that he never yanks guys, that he's never done that. When he was asked to justify leaving his second unit in there while the Bulls were watching a very winnable game slip away to the awesome Los Angeles Lakers. He said, I've never yanked guys.
Oh, man, that's true. It's true. He's never yanked guys. Oh, man. But even with that, okay, so say Boylen, say they do get a chance to see these guys all together in the training facility for whatever it is, 4 weeks, 6 weeks before the season starts, and the Bulls decide to make a change right away. If Boylen's out, and I mean, hindrance on him, Carter liking him or not, I don't think really matters in long-term speak. He could like the next guy that comes in, but maybe they move on from Carter too. It's easier. They can keep Lauri Markkanen at that same position. Carter still has a ton of value. And honestly, from Carter's perspective, I don't blame him, man. He's gotten hurt two seasons in a row now. He's banged up all the time playing center and having to chase fouls for guys that have been historically terrible on defense. I mean, it can be a dreading, daunting task to have to go out there night after night and know that for the most part, the four other guys you're playing with aren't very great on defense, and you're the one having to chase everything down. And ultimately, he was the one picking up 2-3 fouls in the first half. And it's hard to get going when you're constantly thinking about that and having to make up for other guys' mistakes. So combine all of that with not being involved at all in the offense, I can understand his frustration of playing a brand new position and it not working out right now.
Yeah, and I think most scouts around the league would be smart enough to see the positives in Wendell on the defensive end and perhaps the untapped potential, if you want to call it that, of Wendell on the offensive end. Because we have seen little glimpses of Wendell being a player who can have explosive offensive nights. They haven't been frequent, but we've seen little glimpses of evidence of it. Meanwhile, on the defensive end, he has already shown the potential at such a young age, and only a player who's been in the league for two seasons and has been, has had those seasons cut substantially by injuries, as you noted. The already insanely high basketball IQ on the defensive end, and even despite the foul trouble that you mentioned, he was a clear-cut sign for the Bulls defense holding together as best it could. Jim's ridiculous, overuse of the trapping on pick and rolls, scheme was held together by Wendell Carter Jr., his intelligence and his ability to cover a lot of ground. Because you saw when Wendell went down with that injury, the Bulls' defensive rating that Jim Boylan loved to brag about plummeted. So I think knowing that he has that potential to be an all-defensive team player for, you know, years in the prime of his career, plus knowing that maybe he has potential to be a more explosive offensive player and the Bulls just haven't figured out the proper way to do that yet, he would be a very enticing piece for a lot of smart teams around the league who think they can get the best out of him on offense and already know what a value he is on defense.
What happens if they want to keep Carter and they say, you know what, nah, he's too valuable. His defensive presence and we can work out the offense. He had offense when he was at Duke. It's there. We just have to untap it. And I want to throw this in there before we go to Markkanen. There was another bulletin underneath that Jim Boylan quote that said, Carter also noted while talking that the part of the hashtag care factor for Jim Boylan involves Jimbo coming in late at night and also rebounding for him when he's putting up shots. Alrighty then. I don't know.
I mean, it was nice of Wendell to note that for Jim. And if there's one thing that I do believe Jim Boylan means well in, and the thing about Jim that we hear that's real is that Jim does care about his guys. I just don't think he goes about it the right way, and I think he treats them a little bit too much like children and not like adults, albeit young adults, and he doesn't know how to put them in the best positions to succeed. Those things can all simultaneously be true, and based on some of the things we've heard, I do think that Jim cares and that his, you know, brace yourselves, heart is in the right place. But that's not enough. So an anecdote like, oh yeah, he comes in late at night and rebounds for a player who's working and trying to get some shots up, kind of sounds like a person who's desperate to get a passing grade and make those details known. Like a kid who's flunking a course because he's stupid and is like, well, what can I do for extra credit? How many different kinds of extra credit can I get to try and hold on to this grade?
Thanks a lot.
The one thing I will say, and I'm thinking about this now, just because you had said that about Boylan, and I do agree with you. I think he cares a lot about his players. We've heard it from guys even before he was a head coach, right? Jimmy Butler talked about his relationship with Dwayne Wade. There was a few guys here that were important pieces to this Bulls team prior to the rebuild that Jim Boylan had relationships with. He talked about flying out to see Butler multiple times and his first in multiple trips to Finland to go see Lauri Markkanen when they first drafted him. So little things like that, I totally get that. I think he does too. But I also think that there's this mentality, and maybe it goes back to his college days, even prior to Utah, Matt, when he coached under Tom Izzo, and he coached under Rudy Tomjanovich, and coached under guys like Greg Popovich. The Tom Izzo comparison reminds me a lot of what players said about Tom Izzo after Tom Izzo got a ton of criticism for screaming at his one of his players on national TV and looked like he was ready to choke the kid out. There was a lot of comeback from players that played for him and said, no, like, you guys don't understand it. You don't get it. That's the type of mentality we went there for. We knew what we were getting ourselves into. That's the type of coach Izzo is, but he loves his players. Jim Boylan, I feel like, he's not the same as Izzo in any means, but there are some similarities, some coaching patterns, and some relationship patterns that are picked up that I think Boylan takes advantage of, and that's a good thing. It's a plus for Boylan. He's learned how to grasp those relationships, especially with big players in this league. And he's done it with Carter, I think, and he's done it with Butler in the past. There's a few other guys down the line, but I think there is that mentality of always wanting to feel not like on the same level, like friend to friend, but more so, hey, the head coach is also kind of like a dad figure, a superiority figure that I can go to, that I can look up to, looking for somebody to push you. And it just depends. Players are totally different in the mindset that they have and what they're most comfortable with. So I can kind of get that from Carter's perspective. But before we run out of time, Matt, are there any teams that you could see Carter getting moved to or would be at least interested in talking about acquiring him and would have enough capital to trade for him?
Well, I don't know about the capital because I don't think they have a whole lot right now. But the team that I thought Wendell might be really good for is a team that we were just talking about, you know, looking offensively juggernaut-y, but still kind of maybe need some help on the defensive end. And that's the Houston Rockets, because Wendell could be a guy who plays the four for them in this crazy, you know, super small ball Rockets team could give them some help and cover up some holes for them defensively and maybe find a little bit more of his identity on the offensive end and become a player who can, in maybe at times, work on being a floor spacer if you're, you know, in this like two-star ISO player kind of situation with Russ and with Harden. And also maybe give them a little bit more interior scoring and allow Wendell to develop that side of his game. Now, as far as what the Bulls would want and what the Rockets are willing to part with, that's where that might get a little complicated. But to me, that's the team that most clearly could really like develop Wendell in a way that not only helps him in his career, but that team become an even more successful team.
All I know is this team has a lot of draft picks. And they've got two guys off the books that I felt like might be good pairings here in Chicago, but the one is at least going to be on the books for next year, so you could make a deal that makes sense. And that would be OKC. OKC's outperformed what they thought they were going to be, so I think that they're ready to take that next step, and they're going to have a bunch of money, Matt, coming off the books. You know, they got the massive CP3 deal. You've got Steven Adams coming off the books after 2021. This season, you have Gallinari's money at $22 million coming off the books, so if you're not going to re-sign either of those guys, you're looking at almost $50 million in cap space. So OKC, I think, is going to want to upgrade quickly. You're going to want to take advantage of whatever you have left in CP3. You've got a ton of draft picks to play with, so maybe they do want to acquire a young player that they can lock up long term, and maybe this would benefit the Bulls in some ways too. You bring in Steven Adams for 1 year, maybe you could package a deal with Carter and OPJ. Otto Porter's money coming off of OKC's book after a year anyway if they don't want to re-sign him, and it pretty much lining up with what Steven Adams' money is. Steven Adams only still being 26 years old, there's your defensive anchor right there, right? And you could potentially re-sign him long-term. He's a piece I've even talked about 2 years ago that I would like the Bulls to have. He just seems like a very, very Bulls type of player. And complimenting him alongside guys like Lauri Markkanen and allowing him to be a little bit more free, not having to worry so much about his defensive side of the ball, and letting Zach LaVine, I mean, running pick and roll with Steven Adams and Zach LaVine would just be beautiful. And same thing with Coby White. So there's a package right there right off the top of the dome, and you probably need to add more things to both sides to make it even. But that would be something that I would be curious about too. And depends on what OKC, I guess, wants to do after this season.
Yeah, and I still think personally, I would like to see the Bulls give at least one more season at a shot of developing Wendell, figuring out where that potential is. Because a lot of people have, you know, talked about collectively this young Bulls roster, the highest ceiling player actually being not Zach or not Lowry, but Wendell. And again, like I was saying earlier, glimpses of it offensively. A lot of it is already there on the defensive end, and the Bulls for years have, when they've been successful, had some defensive anchor like that. And I think if you are going to be a team that goes deep in the playoffs and wins titles, you need, as much as today's NBA is about offense, 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 you need to have those guys that are dominant defensively and either most usefully at the wing spot or being a rim protector. And I think, you know, Wendell's defensive versatility in a variety of ways can honestly give you both of those things. So I would be disappointed if the Bulls, as we're talking about, you know, these hypotheticals right now and the rumor mill of teams being interested in all these young pieces on the roster, I'll be disappointed if the Bulls gave up on Wendell before next season and shipped him off. I would like to see him get one more season with this Bulls core, with this new front office, and hopefully a new head coach before they make a decision on him.
I would agree with that. I think I want to see him actually get out there and be able to play alongside Markkanen and LaVine and White and even OPJ for more than, what, 25 games this season and actually see things go right, go the way that they're supposed to, whether it plays out negatively or positively. And we ultimately realize maybe Carter isn't the guy, or maybe Markkanen isn't the guy, but we need to still at least see that. And I can't even believe we're still saying that we're about to head into year four of the rebuild and we still haven't really seen these guys play it all together. It's crazy to me. The other team I will throw out there, and this can lead to tomorrow's conversation, Matt, because we didn't have enough time to talk about Markkanen, but I definitely want to do that tomorrow, would be another team that I would say don't forget about is the Jazz. The Jazz, I think, can be a potential trade partner for the Bulls in multiple different ways. And if things don't go right for the Jazz this year and the bubble has ended up being a disappointment, they may be looking to trade one or two of those guys off that team. So Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, whoever, other pieces that they're trying to blow up and restart, that could be a potential fit. And especially with Karnaušovas's relationship with Gobert going back all the way to 2013 with the Nuggets, things could get interesting this offseason. So I want to bring up the Jazz tomorrow and a few other teams that maybe might be interested in Markkanen.
Jazz look like a team in trouble in their first couple of games in the restart so far. We knew that they were not a very deep team coming in, and that if they were going to have success, a lot of it would be on the shoulders of their starting lineup and, you know, and their two stars, Mitchell and Gobert. And, you know, you're right to point them out as a potential, you know, partner, just because I've noticed a hell of a lot of Bulls fans being in love with the idea of acquiring Gobert via trade, especially with the whole, is there an irreparable relationship, you know, with him and Mitchell because of the whole COVID thing. And some of that seems to have died down, at least for now, but maybe it isn't fixable long-term, and that might be a reason for them to ship one of those guys, and maybe Gobert is the more likely guy to ship than Mitchell. But I'm a little bit, you know, befuddled as to why Bulls fans seem to be so obsessed with Gobert. I obviously, you know, a perennial DPOY candidate. And you know, we were just talking about why those are important, but I don't know how much leg Rudy's going to have. Like, you know, I don't know how much longer his prime is going to last. I don't know why. It's just like, I just have a weird feeling about Gobert not being long for this world as far as like a big name star that people talk about. I have really no basis for that whatsoever. I don't know. I've just always had a feeling that Gobert is going to be a guy who fizzles out early. I don't know why.
He's a guy that would definitely come cheaper than what he's at right now, I think, unless he wins another Defensive Player of the Year award and then next year he outperforms what we're talking about right now, then you might be looking along the similar lines of $25 million. But what's funny is we picked out two centers that have make about the same money. Gobert is definitely the better defensive player, but I would argue Steven Adams definitely the better offensive player. And Steven Adams no slouch on defense either, but both come off
honestly,
the books
it's like
in 2021.
If you asked me to take a pick, who would I rather have on this Bulls roster? I'd probably pick Steven Adams, which is crazy. Because he's not a DPOY perennial candidate, but he's so valuable.
Matt, maybe we'll have to walk through our new friends at B-Ball Index who have given us the amazing tools to kind of dive into these stats and compare. Maybe we'll have to go tomorrow and let's throw Rudy Gobert and Steven Adams in the player comparison machine and see how those two guys stack up. And maybe we can do that with a couple other Bulls players. But yeah, Rudy Gobert's off the books at 2021 as well. So yeah, man. And it seems like the perfect fit. Like the Bulls have the pieces that the Jazz would want to acquire. And it just doesn't make any sense now that they have Conley for another year. He's obviously going to pick up that option. So you're going to have him for an additional year at $34 million. You're not going to be able to move him. And I don't know, him and Donovan Mitchell just don't look right together out there. But yeah, a lot of more trade talk and hypotheticals to talk about tomorrow. Definitely want to get into Markkanen. Drop your texts and your voicemails. You've got a thought on either of these guys getting moved, or maybe even want to go back to last week and the interest in Zach LaVine. What teams do you think would fit best or would be interested in these guys headed to the offseason? Hit us up at 331-979-1369. Your text, your voicemails there. We're on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on email too if you don't want to hit us up on social media, or text and voicemail line lockedonbulls@gmail.com. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Payne almost lost his balance off all those crossovers.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com